It's 1706 GMT. I'm Audrey Brown with a special edition of Focus on Africa from the BBC World Service. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa is being described as the worst ever. It began in a town in Guinea called Gekedu, in a region where the country meets Liberia and Sierra Leone. A patient and the doctor treating him were the first known to have died. And from there, it spread, killing more than 1,000 people, including 4 most recently in Nigeria. The World Health Organization recently declared it an international health emergency and approved the use of experimental drugs to help some of the affected patients. The president of Médecins Sans Frontières said today it'll take about 6 months to bring the outbreak under control. This is unlike what happened in previous episodes when it was contained within weeks and fewer people died. So why is it so difficult to contain the outbreak this time around? What lessons were learned from the last time? And what's the effect of Ebola on the health systems, the social networks and the economies of the countries involved? And what can these countries learn from Uganda, where there have been 5 outbreaks since the year 2000? Over the next hour here on Focus on Africa, we'll be exploring all these issues. We'll hear from survivors, the medical workers on the front line, and we'll also hear about other countries that are affected. My special guest will be Dr. Sam Okware, who's the Director General of the National Health Research Organization in Uganda, and he's the man who supervises Uganda's Ebola containment strategy. I'm just going to check very quickly and see if you're there. Dr. Sam Okware, welcome to Focus on Africa.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll start with the news today that organizations dealing with the Ebola outbreak in Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Nigeria sounded warning bells about the reach and speed of the virus. The World Health Organization said the magnitude may be vastly underestimated, and Médecins Sans Frontières followed shortly with a declaration of its own, saying the virus was traveling further and faster than the measures in place to try and contain it. MSF President Joanne Liu said it couldn't be compared to any previous outbreak of the disease.
It's like a front line. It's moving, it's advancing, but we have no clue how it's going to go around. It went because we used to have Ebola, and I'm sure some of you have covered in the past, that when it was in some of isolated villages, it was a business for between 6 to 8 weeks, and it will die out afterwards. Our first cases of Ebola was in March 2014, if you remember well.
These statements come as the latest numbers of cases reported by the World Health Organization nears 2,000 and the number of confirmed deaths nudges upwards towards 1,100 people. To explain what was meant by these statements, I spoke to Tarek Yasharovich of the World Health Organization.
What we are really trying to say, Audrey, is two things. One thing is that there is still transmission going on in places that we are not aware of. But beyond that, what is really more important is that this outbreak can have a negative impact much wider than just on those who are infected and their families. We are talking about economic impact. We are talking about social impact. We are talking about humanitarian impact. And we could also speak about security impact. So this is something that we really have to look at from a larger perspective.
When you say it may be vastly underestimated, those are very strong words. If the World Health Organization makes a statement like that, people that are already afraid become even more afraid, and people who might not have any reason to be afraid then become afraid.
What we really want, Audrey, is everyone to understand what the risk really is, and we want to mobilize everyone, all those who can help, to assist those countries who are fighting this this outbreak right now.
So what is the risk really? What is the risk really for ordinary people on the ground in those countries that are affected right now, and for people who are in Category 2 and Category 3 risk groups, which you have defined?
There are areas in those countries that are not affected at all, and we want it to stay that way. But we want these communities upon which we have put some restrictive measures regarding travel, we need to provide them with enough of food, enough of medicines, so there's an incentive for them to stay and they get really the care they need. And this is why we really need outside help, because these countries have very weak health systems and cannot cope on their own.
Is this your way of saying that perhaps that you underestimated the impact of the virus and that you reacted rather less, you know, quickly than you could have right at the beginning of the outbreak?
I was myself in Guinea in April, days after this outbreak has been declared. We, from the day one, were working alongside other partners to support Ministry of Health in Guinea first, and then later in Liberia and Sierra Leone as well, to try really to provide expertise these countries did not have. We need to put enough of resources to have enough of protective equipment, to have enough of cars that we can go in these very remote areas.
Really, I don't mean to sound callous, but I'm just wondering why, with less than 2,000 people dead in a good few months, should all these resources be used to fight Ebola when there are other bigger health challenges, you know, that are playing out right now?
The reason is that the fatality ratio is very high. And if we don't contain it, it will just continue. And then we risk that it's being spread. And as I said, this is the disease that causes other problem than health problem, stigmatization, economic impact that may have on travel and trade. So we really have to deal with it.
That was Tarek Yasharevich of the World Health Organization. Now, Dr. Sam Okwara, the Director General of the National Health Research Organization in Uganda, is on the line as well, and he joins us. Now, Dr. Okwara, Uganda's had 5 Ebola outbreaks, and you were in charge of supervising the containment strategy for those outbreaks. I want to start by asking you first, do you think the effect of the current outbreak may be vastly underestimated, as being said by the World Health Organization?
There's no doubt that the outbreak in West Africa is an unprecedented health emergency. The current outbreak has been the largest, I think, and the most sensational. It has been dramatic, and I think the papers and the population has dramatized the whole outbreak. And that has generated fear, and that has also generated a lot of socioeconomic consequences.
When you say dramatized, are you saying that it's not as bad as they're saying?
Well, it has sensitized. It's bad, and it's bad, and it has been brought to our attention, to the world attention, by the media and also the population. People are scared.
Why has it been so bad, this particular outbreak?
Well, this particular outbreak has been so bad because, first of all, I think nobody was expecting it. Secondly, I think it was in hard-to-reach areas, very difficult areas at the border. And thirdly, I think there was delays in recognition, almost several months, I think. And I think also there was the issue of human resource, which is quite a big problem in low-resource countries.
Nobody ever expected, though, surely. So are there some factors that weigh more heavily than others?
Well, this is a disease basically of tropical Africa or equatorial Africa. For the last, since the first cases were discovered in DRC, DR Congo, there have been almost 12 outbreaks. Of these, I think 5 have been in Uganda. I think one of the worst outbreaks has been in Uganda, and this particular one is supersedes that one. So there are many reasons why they think that these outbreaks occur in tropical Africa.
Okay. Dr. Okwara. I'm going to come back to you. You'll be joining us for the whole hour. We'll be talking about lessons that can be learned from Uganda and also the reasons why these Ebola outbreaks continue to happen. But let's move to Guinea and the subject of the health workers who are basically very much at risk, in fact, most at risk. The BBC's Alhassan Silla has been speaking to a doctor in the Guinean capital, Conakry, about his experience of the outbreak.
My name is Dr. Ibrahima. I'm the responsible of the CTE of the Donka. And I'm also from the infectious disease department of Donka. I'm one of the doctors who are treating Ebola in this center since 4-5 months ago.
How do you, on a personal note, how do you treat these Ebola patients?
I saw some patients dying, suffering, and that is something emotionally hard to live with it. For the first time we saw Ebola, we heard that there was no treatment, there was no preventive treatment also, so it was something very hard to see someone with Ebola. The first thing you said inside your mind that is that, oh my God, another one who is going to die. But the people also get afraid. Everyone in this center has been afraid for the first time. But seeing things is going on give us some courage to go on, to go ahead, because we understood that we can cure some patients from Ebola. So it has been very hard, but for the moment it's less hard than the first time.
How have you reacted to losing colleagues through this disease?
Always difficult, always hard, always difficult inside our heart. Because, you know, losing someone who is trying to give health to the population, someone who is trying to give another life, it's something very hard. The only one thing they have done is to try to help, and they become some victim on Ebola.
Outside of this tent, this office that we are, you know, are you stigmatized in any way because you treat Ebola patients? Do you feel isolated for any reason, sir?
Yes, since the beginning of this outbreak, I feel that I have been stigmatized about Ebola, because even inside of my family, some of them doesn't even want to approach me. Some of them don't want to get next to me because of they think that I am inside the Ebola center so that I can transmit them the virus. So even if you try to make them understand, it is not easy for them. And I understand. Some of my own family doesn't even want me to touch their own children. They know that I'm coming from the Ebola centers. For them, it's a high risk for their family. So even inside the ceremonies, if I'm inside, I saw the stigmatization because all of them trying to get far away from me. But it is something that I have to deal with it, because I've chosen to treat people. So I understand those ones who don't understand what I'm doing here, because everyone is afraid about this outbreak. So I understand them, but I don't have the choice. I have to deal with that.
The very heartbreaking experiences of a doctor in Guinea there, in that report by Al-Hassan Silla. Dr. Okware, we're back with you. The World Health Organization says that at least 80 health workers have died from Ebola in this outbreak. Can you explain why so many?
The basic reason is that the healthcare workers, especially in developing countries, are in the front line of this infection. The disease, it goes back to how the disease is transmitted. The disease is transmitted by contact with fluids with a known case. And many times these patients go to the hospital and they give sometimes not a very reliable diagnosis. And also secondly, we don't actually know when these patients come to the hospital. Sadly, there are problems with supplies. And so also there are other supplies and overcrowding in these places is rampant. And therefore, in situations where healthcare workers are few and where they have no supplies and where there is this type of low resource settings, nosocomial infection, that is infection in the hospital, is quite common.
Right. And he also talks there about stigmatization.
Yes. Yes, stigma is quite common, unfortunately, in this epidemic. But unfortunately, if there is stigma actually undermines the whole control effort. Because patients usually go underground and they sometimes go to witch doctors in rural areas. And this level of rejection always actually may sometimes cause more problems because these patients mingle with us and they disappear and they continue to be sources of infection. I think really we must fight stigma with information, we must fight stigma with the discussion, and we must be able to tell the patients how the disease is transmitted. There must be clarity. And what is important is we must tell the patients that the disease is not transmitted by air. The disease is transmitted by contact.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Okware. Yes. Dr. Okware will be coming back to you in the course of the program. Let's go to Liberia now, where there are serious concerns being raised about the spread of Ebola. Just today, in fact, MSF was saying that this is the area where there's serious concern. Well, we have the MSF Emergency Coordinator in Liberia on the line, Lindis Hurum there. Good afternoon. Can you tell us why is it so difficult to contain the spread in Liberia?
Yeah, good afternoon. The situation in Liberia is very difficult for various reasons. One of them being that the outbreak has hit very hard, not only the capital where I am currently. And that outbreak is all over the city at this point. All districts have been Ebola cases. It is getting out of control. And we are currently building a new unit. We're working day and night to get it up. And it will be the biggest unit that we've ever managed. And we are now preparing for 300 bed capacity.
Just remind us, and I am aware that the line is quite poor, but it seems to be getting better. But let's just press on with this particular one question. What measures are in place to try and contain the spread?
At this point, all the measures that have been trying to be put in place is not sufficient. So all the mechanisms need to be strengthened on all areas, be it the unit or the surveillance or the training of the staff or the infection control. So that is why it is now out of control, and we cannot cope with the situation at this point.
Lindis Hurum, sorry, the line is really bad. So we're going to try and reach you again on a different line. That was MSF Emergency Coordinator in Liberia. Fortunately, we still have Dr. Okware, will be with us for the whole hour in Uganda, who's had lots of experience in applying measures to try and contain the spread of Ebola. Just tell us what you did in Uganda, Dr. Okware.
I think first and foremost, you need leadership. Leadership at all levels, from the national level, district level, up to the community level. I think even more important is the fact that the leadership at the community level is what really makes the difference. Secondly, I think we need to be open. Thirdly, we need to share these ideas with all our with the community and also with all the stakeholders. This level of transparency is what is most important in trying to ensure that everybody is involved, everybody is participating, and that stigma and all the other issues, social issues, are minimized. And fourthly, as I said, the real difference really is made at the community level by the people and not centrally by the government. The government helps with facilitation. The government gives you the general plan, oversight, and so on. But the actual difference is made by the people at the village level. The people at the village level must be able to get their own leader. They must get a few people, like, say, 3, 4, 5 people who are going around the village every day and asking questions and making sure that those who are sick are picked up
and
isolated.
Okay, Dr. Okware, we'll be coming back to you again. Thank you very much. Let's hear some social media comments from Kim Chakanetsa.
Now, I'm glad Dr. Okware brought up the issue of leadership because that's something on the forefront of our listeners' mind. One post from South Sudan wanted to find out if the issue of Ebola was raised at the U.S.-Africa summit that recently ended. And if so, what is Washington saying about it? I believe that just this week, President Obama did reiterate his commitment to containing the outbreak, and he spoke to the presidents of some of the affected countries to express solidarity with them. Now, other listeners are pushing for more active leadership on the part of their government. Mohamed Turukana in Freetown says the fight against Ebola in Sierra Leone needs proactive measures by the government and the international community to stop its spread. So we'll be bringing you more of these comments as we go along in our program.
Thank you very much, Kim Chakanetsa. My name is Audrey Brown, and it's coming up to 17:25 Greenwich Mean Time.
Hello and welcome to this special BBC public health broadcast on Ebola. I'm Maura Cullen. Today we're going to look at the issue of treatment. This week, the World Health Organization took the unprecedented step of approving the use of untested drugs for people with the disease. The epidemic has killed more than 1,000 people in Sierra Leone, Guinea, Liberia, and Nigeria. But in reality, very few of the infected people will be treated by these drugs. So for the moment, the best chance of surviving Ebola is to report suspected cases immediately. Dr. Timothy O'Dempsey is a senior clinical lecturer at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine in the UK. He has just returned from treating Ebola patients in Sierra Leone. I asked him exactly what sort of treatment a patient could expect.
The treatment offered might include fluids, oral fluids or intravenous fluids. It may include antibiotics. It may include various other medicines that would be required depending on the clinical presentation of the patient. And one of the important things is for people to present as early as possible, because that gives us the best opportunity of helping them through this illness. If they present late with complications, then it makes it much more difficult. People may have heard of figures of 90% of people who get Ebola dying. That's not actually true. If they're properly managed, then we could get that figure well down, perhaps even less than 30%.
And people are recovering not just in Sierra Leone. In Guinea, where the epidemic began, this man survived the illness along with his wife and cousin.
I tried to be positive. I was thinking about death, but deep inside I thought my time hadn't come yet and I would get over it. This is how I overcame the pain and the fear, although I was scared when I saw my relatives dying in front of me. At this point, I thought some of us would die and some of us would survive, and I was hoping to be among the survivors. The doctors would come to see me and were asking questions, and one day, nearly all my answers to their questions were no, no, and no. The doctors were very pleased, and I realized that they would make it. That was a very powerful feeling for me.
So remember, if you think you have Ebola, don't be afraid to come forward. It can be treated. The earlier it's detected, the better your chances of survival. And don't forget the country hotlines. In Sierra Leone, call 117. In Guinea, the number is 115. In Liberia, it's 4455 or 1333. And in Lagos State, Nigeria, the number is 0800 32 65 243 57. And for more news and information on the Ebola outbreak, you can go to bbcafrica.com. We're back next Wednesday with another special Ebola broadcast on the BBC World Service.
You're back with us here on Focus on Africa. Dr. Okware, we've put out a social media call for people to send us questions. There's a concern here from somebody in Togo. They live near the airport and they feel it's a small country and lots of people are traveling in between. So they're worried that, you know, it could spread. Very briefly, how would you answer that?
Well, I think... what they should actually do is to ensure that they take care of themselves. They must get proper information, they must get clarity of what's Ebola, and also they must get public information from across the board. Now, the way we managed Ebola here in Uganda was that it was very important that the cases were detected early. Early case detection and early communication.
Thank you very much, Dr. Okware. We'll be back with you shortly. Early case detection there. This is a special edition of Focus on Africa on the BBC World Service with me, Audrey Brown. We'll hear a summary of the news shortly, but let me bring you up to date with other stories in the news in Africa. Boko Haram militants have kidnapped dozens of people in a raid on remote villages in northeast Nigeria. Survivors told the BBC that the militants killed at least 25 people and injured many others on Sunday before taking the hostages away on boats across Lake Chad. South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal has reserved judgment in an appeal brought by Jacob Zuma, the president, that the National Prosecuting Authority hand over a copy of the so-called spy tapes to the official opposition Democratic Alliance. And a maximum security prison in Kenya has been the unusual setting for a ceremony awarding a diploma from the University of London. An inmate at Kamiti Prison in Nairobi has received a diploma in common law.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. The president of Médecins Sans Frontières, Joanne Liu, says it will take at least 6 months to bring the Ebola epidemic in West Africa under control. She called for greater leadership from the World Health Organization. Responding, a WHO spokesman said the organization had deployed 500 staff and had launched an appeal for $100 million. Sunni tribal leaders in Iraq have said they're ready to work with the new Prime Minister, Haider al-Abadi, and fight against the Islamic State jihadists if his government restores Sunni rights. At a news conference, Sheikh Ali Hatem al-Sulaiman called for a popular referendum on more autonomy for Sunni areas, including the right to set up a provincial guard. President Petro Poroshenko says Ukrainian forces destroyed a significant part of a Russian armoured column that entered Ukrainian territory on Thursday night. In a statement, Mr. Poroshenko said he had a telephone discussion with the British Prime Minister about reports that Russian military vehicles had been seen moving across the border. Police in the US state of Missouri have named Darren Wilson as the officer who shot dead an unarmed black teenager in a St. Louis suburb last weekend, sparking violent protests. They'd earlier refused to name him for his own safety. Police also said the dead man, Michael Brown, was suspected of involvement in stealing cigars from a shop. Boko Haram militants have kidnapped dozens of people in a raid on a remote area of northeast Nigeria. Survivors of the raid on Sunday told the BBC that at least 25 people were killed and hostages taken away on boats across Lake Chad. More than 200 schoolgirls abducted in April are still missing. Thailand has imposed new restrictions on taking children born to surrogate parents out of the country. Four foreign couples are reported to have been prevented from leaving until they have court documents on child custody. BBC News.
You're listening to Focus on Africa on a special edition of the programme with me, Audrey Brown, from the BBC World Service. Now, so far, we've explored the challenges in containing the Ebola outbreak. We've heard from a doctor on the front line in Guinea. We've also been hearing from Dr. Sam Okware, the man who supervised the containment strategy for Uganda's five Ebola outbreaks. In a moment, we'll hear from survivors in Sierra Leone and also in Uganda. But first, let's get the latest on the outbreak from the ground. Dr. Francis Kasolo is coordinator of the World Health Organization's Ebola Response Center in Guinea, which also covers Liberia and Sierra Leone, which are the other two countries worst affected. There is, of course, Nigeria as well. Now, Dr. Kasolo, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Tell us what's happening in Guinea. Is the virus, the spread of it slowing down or is it speeding up?
Well, thank you very much for having us on the program. Guinea gives us a sign of hope with the numbers of cases seeming to stabilize. However, we still are concerned with the Liberia and Sierra Leone where we are seeing increasing numbers of cases. And obviously more help is needed to support the response. And in particular, we are hoping we could have foreign medical teams that are self-sufficient, that can come and hit the ground running and help with the response.
What's the thing that you need most? You've mentioned the foreign medical teams, but I'm just wondering, you know, do you have enough protective gear for the health workers who are there now? Because so many health workers are dying.
Well, thank you. What we really need most really are the hands, the human resource to deploy to these particular hotspots. We, of course, are grateful to the international community that has responded generously, but secondly, the human resource is key in tackling this. Specifically, we need epidemiologists and persons that are specialists in treatment and infection prevention.
Now, you know, the World Health Organization today said that the epidemic is vastly underestimated. Is that your view as well?
Well, I would say the numbers are underestimated, but not exactly vastly underestimated. And the reason for this is that certainly at the beginning of any epidemic, we usually do have problems in picking up all the cases that are falling ill or are being identified. But as the epidemic has evolved, we've had improvement in the identification of cases through the communities, But also, we've had at least systems put in to support the contact tracing of people that have come into contact with the infected persons. So things are improving in terms of identifying new cases, and I think the numbers that we are now putting out are very close to the actual numbers of cases that are going on in all the three countries.
Do you think it'll take 6 months for the disease to be brought under control, as MSF has been saying, or will it be sooner in Guinea?
Well, our hope in Guinea is that we'll continue learning from the good experiences that are taking place, and that the disease will be controlled within the shortest possible time. But overall, we do agree with MSF that it may take up to 6 months to be able to control the outbreak.
Thank you very much. That's Dr. Francis Kasolo, coordinator of the World Health Organization's Ebola Response Center in Guinea. Now, so far, more than 1,000 people have died across four countries. The fatality rate of the current outbreak is about 55%, and not the 90% or so which it had been in some previous outbreaks. In the last 14 years, we've been hearing that Uganda has had five Ebola outbreaks, the first being in the year 2000 in the north of the country. Ebola attacked a region already devastated by war and killed more than half of the 400 affected people. Two hospitals in the town of Gulu became the epicenter for treatment and management. A team of medical supervisors at Lachor Hospital, led by the superintendent, Dr. Matthew Lukiwa, who unfortunately succumbed to the illness, handled most of the cases. The BBC's patient Atu Haire has been to Lachor Hospital, and she found out that the scars left by Ebola haven't completely healed.
In the year 2000, when we had an Ebola outbreak, this ward was quickly evacuated and turned into an isolation ward. Where we stand was the entrance. There was a ceremony which everybody entering the ward had to perform. You had to step through disinfections to disinfect your feet when you're coming in and also going.
Dr. Eminton Odong, the medical director of St. Mary's Hospital, Lachor, shows me around the general medical ward. Most of the neat rows of beds are empty and say nothing of how crowded and dangerous this place was in the year 2000. Lachor Hospital was one of two Ebola treatment centers in Gulu town during Uganda's first and so far worst outbreak. Walter Odong, who had been working as a volunteer during most of the outbreak, was one of the last people to be admitted in this ward. 14 years later, the memory of the Ebola attack remains fresh on his mind.
I was put alone in a ward, in a very big ward, I was alone. Because they had thought something could happen to me strange. Then the other person may get scared. Then I was put on drip. They brought for me 5 liters of ORS, oral rehydrated salts. When they brought for me that, they asked me to take it within 24 hours. I took that 5 liters in about 10 minutes. From that midday up to around 6 o'clock, I had already taken 25 liters of ORS.
Odong was one of the cases even the medical workers at the time described as a miracle.
There is a brother working in Lachor Hospital. He was asking some of his workers, he was saying, carry that one coffin with one body bag, bring it here. I didn't know brother was preparing that body bag and the coffin for me. They went as far as talking to my brother's wife, who was a staff. You go home right now, tell the family to dig the grave. Tomorrow morning we shall come and bury him very fast, and we move away, and the people must not gather there. Doctors and everybody had already lost hope.
On the streets of Gulu town, local residents describe the days of the Black Death, as Ebola is sometimes referred to, as simply being characterized by fear.
Actually, people were so fearful by then. They don't want even to visit, to make a visit to one another. People were not gathering together. Actually, that one was stopped, especially the disco places.
There was no gathering together. Even going to church was a bit difficult. No greeting to each other. You don't greet each other. It took us a lot of time. It was that time when they told us that there was no Ebola in Gulu. That's when we became all right.
The days of avoiding personal contact may be far behind the people of Gulu and the entire northern Uganda, but the devastation that Ebola left in its wake certainly hasn't been forgotten.
That's the BBC's Patience Atuhaire there reporting. Dr. Okware is still on the line with us from Uganda. I'm just wondering, Dr. Okware, listening to that, do the scars of Ebola ever heal? You are a veteran now of 5 outbreaks.
Yeah, we had special challenges at that time, and up to now even I think we still have the same challenges since there's no treatment. The major challenges really were the issues of no cure, overcrowding, and also healthcare workers who had run away from the hospital.
It sounds like very much like not necessarily the running away from the hospital, but it sounds very much like the same sorts of problems that are experienced in West Africa now. I'm just wondering, how do you solve the problems, though? Is it money or is it other things?
No, I think first thing is clarity. And secondly, we have to make sure that people have proper incentives. They have incentives, compensation, and also allowances. These nurses were dedicated. We made sure that everybody who participated in the containment was actually given some incentive. We also found that there were some gaps in the isolation wards. For instance, some of the nurses got infected from outside the traditional isolation wards. So we had to extend the program all across the hospital and for all the staff, especially drivers who were carrying the ambulance, who were taking the patients for referral to tertiary institutions. We also had another very big problem, that was stigma. Stigma came in and patients ran away.
Patients
went underground.
We heard about that quite a bit earlier. What I wanted to find out was, what were the cultural practices perhaps that you had to overcome, and how do you overcome them when you say to people, don't bury your dead, something so intimate? How do you stop them from doing that?
Yes, there were several levels of cultural obstacles. First of all, it's very unusual for people to be buried outside their ancestral homes. And secondly, we found that some of the cultural practices put women to risk, especially the elderly women. 64% of the Ebola victims were women. And when we traced backwards, we found that these victims had actually participated in ritual rites that had cleansed the bodies before the bodies of Ebola victims before they were buried. So these are some of the things which I thought actually accentuated the issue of accentuated transmission.
Okay. Now, Dr. Okware, sorry. I just want to hand us over to my colleague Kim Chakanetsa, because she's been gathering comments from our social media platforms. And you can listen to some of the comments that are made, and we can pick up if you want to respond to any of the things that you hear from there. Kim Chakanetsa?
Let's hear.
Now, one of the issues that listeners have seized on is the announcement you mentioned earlier about Médecins Sans Frontières saying that it will take about 6 months of international effort to bring the epidemic under control. That time frame has a lot of people worried. Piers Rouse, Akateng in Ghana, asks, how many more people will die of this deadly virus in the next 6 months? Another listener, Hazel Akumembi, says, she's equally frustrated. 6 months, do they realise people are dying? Now, there also seems to be some confusion among our listeners about why it will take so long to tackle the disease, given the UN approval of the use of the untested drug ZMapp, and also Canada's offer to donate more untested drug. One listener asked, what happened to the Canadian vaccine? Now, it might be worth reiterating the limitations of the vaccine, that it's A, untested, B, in limited quantities, and perhaps most importantly, not necessarily a magic bullet. I just want to end by one listener comment from Nigeria who mentions some native medicine that they're using. Now, I bring this up because it ties into the report we heard earlier about one of the challenges being misinformation with these supposed home cures, which are doing more harm than good. And I think it's important to drive that point home.
Thank you very much, Kim Chakanetsa. Then, of course, if you want to contribute, please do via our Facebook page. And also, you can, for in preparation for our next program at 19 hours GMT, when we'll be taking direct questions and also participation from you, 4477-86-2050-75 is our text number if you want to leave your number there. This is the BBC World Service. I'm Audrey Brown on Focus on Africa. . 1746 GMT. Now in Sierra Leone, President Ernest Bai Koroma has been speaking at a press conference. He called for more help from the international community.
We know commitments have been made, pronouncements have been made. I believe that because WHO has now made it an international health emergency, we have to respond as an international community. And if our people are dying, and the response, you know, should be an extraordinary response, because this is an extraordinary situation. We must limit the bureaucracy and come and save our people, as we have doing to ensure peace in other countries and to save the lives of other nationals of other countries.
That's President Ernest Bai Koroma there. We're hoping that we'll be able to speak to him directly in our next edition at 19 hours GMT. Now, we've seen Ebola spread to four countries in Africa: Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia and Nigeria. Ghana is in the region, but it doesn't adjoin any of those countries. Yet the outbreak is affecting businesses there already. The economy is already suffering with high inflation and a sharp drop in the value of the cedi. And now the hospitality industry and second-hand clothing sellers all alike, sales are dropping. From Ghana, Sammy Darko reports.
Although Ghana has not recorded any Ebola cases, international media portrayal of West Africa as a place of Ebola is scaring people from coming here to do business. The Ghanaian government, for instance, has suspended all international meetings in the country for the next 3 months. People's attitudes have changed and many are being more cautious on the streets of Accra.
I should be more than worried. I now have a hand sanitizer. I try to clean my hands. I try to educate my kids, especially, that they should just be careful. And to be honest with you, they were supposed to be going for classes. I've confined them in the house. I don't want them to go out because I don't know what might happen.
I'm someone who really enjoys bushmeat. But because of this issue, you know, I've also reduced drastically my intake of bushmeat.
I'm outside the African Regent Hotel, a four-star property nestled in one of Accra's prestigious neighborhoods. A welcoming huge fountain few meters from the imposing front glass doors and bores with Edinkra symbols signifying the Ghanaian industrial dexterity. And just to my left is a pool surrounded by huge trees which serve as a shade to the scorching sun. They have recorded a 20% drop in bookings and cancellations of events. Mariam Dakwa speaks for the hotel.
Yes, it has affected us greatly because the reports everywhere is talking about Ebola in West Africa. Recently, we had a conference for 150 guests, which was cancelled because the speaker was coming from South Africa and he would rather not come because of the Ebola scare.
Business owners here are worried about government's failure to assure tourists and business travellers of the measures government of Ghana is taking to control or prevent the virus in Ghana. And it is not just the high-end hotels that have been affected. Food vendors are equally experiencing the impact of Ebola. Vendors who sell bush meat are the hardest hit. Ebola is known to spread through bats, which are a delicacy among some groups in some parts of Ghana, and other wildlife species such as monkeys, grass cutters, and porcupines. Many are now avoiding these meats.
We are now being told Ebola spreads through chewing of meat. So many of our customers are avoiding buying meat, especially bats. When we cook and they don't buy, it's a huge loss for us.
Ghana has had about 46 suspected Ebola-like cases, which have all proved negative. But the shadow of Ebola lingers everywhere. For some businesses, this is not a good time. But for others, particularly in the antiseptics market, it is. as more people are now purchasing hand sanitizers and detergents.
That's Sammy Darko there in Ghana. Let's go back to Uganda, where Dr. Sam Okware, the Director General of the National Health Research Organization in Uganda, is on the line. He's been our guest for this last hour. So hand sanitizers, sales are going up, Dr. Okware, but the economy of Ghana is already suffering. And I have no doubt that in other parts where the virus is directly operating, the economy is already suffering. Does it surprise you, though, that in Ghana, so far away from everything, that people are scared of going there now?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I think stigma and fear and all these other issues are part of the cycle.
Is there any way of breaking through it with information? Because there is information, but people are not heeding it.
Education. We need education, public education, and clarity on what's Ebola and what's not Ebola. Ebola is not an animal. So it's very important that we fight rumors. There must be effective rumor management. There must be improved partnerships, especially at the community level. Let the people at the community level know what Ebola is and participate in its containment.
But what can you do when, despite World Health Organization guidelines, airlines like British Airways cancel their flights to affected countries?
Yeah, well, that's normal. I think that's a knee-jerk reaction. They're doing that because they're not quite sure of what's coming next.
Do you think, as we heard the president of Guinea earlier this week complain about the Western media sort of blowing, over-emphasizing and blowing up Ebola, and also just, you know, when we talk about it, we say Ebola in West Africa. Do you think that that is damaging?
No, I think the media is quite an important. They're quite important in this containment. They are part of the solution, although they sometimes have exaggerated issues here and there. But I think this is why it's important to bring them the very beginning into the containment, into the whole process of containing the epidemic.
And how do you think the media is behaving in this regard?
Well, you see, you must understand that the media is also, they're also human beings and they're equally scared. And in fact, because they are always traveling, they're actually at a much higher risk of contracting the disease. So, and also this is a very high profile of disease. So it's not really surprising that the whole thing has been dramatized as I did mention earlier. So I think the best thing that we can do is to work together with the media. And the media is very effective. And there are many aspects of the media now. You have the cell phones, you have the satellite televisions. All these can help us to contain this epidemic.
Speaking of platforms,
give you an example here where we had the best scenario where we had only one single case in the outbreak in Luero. That outbreak, we used the media. I think the media, more than anybody else, was responsible for containment of that particular epidemic.
And how did that work? What happened?
Well, as soon as the disease was detected, there was early detection and there was immediate communication to the media houses. There was press conferences. The government, the president, and everybody came on board. The whole country was mobilized. And within 24 hours, in fact, within 2 days, the whole epidemic was over. That was the only single case. So the point I'm trying to say here is that the media is part of the solution. They should not be excluded in any in our endeavors.
Let's look at other platforms besides the traditional media platforms that you have been talking about. Kim Chakanetsa has been feeding us information from the various social media platforms that we have spoken about earlier. So, Kim, what have you been gathering from people on Facebook and Twitter and so on?
Thanks, Audrey. Just a variety of comments, but I would like to start with a question, actually, and this is for Dr. Okware. Nkoya Michael suggests that efforts should be directed towards producing palliative medicine that will keep those infected alive until there's a vaccine available. And I wanted to ask the doctor, is there any weight to this suggestion?
From our experience here, we found that most of the patients died within 22 days. The majority of the patients, even those who were on palliative care, who are being rehydrated and so on. So I do not see any cure within the next 21 days. I think that's really the problem.
Okay, thank you for that. I just want to go through a few more comments. A few listeners have been commenting on Ebola and its effect on business overall. One of the issues we explored in some depth on our program this week is Kenya Airlines' decision to continue flying. One post on our BBC Africa Facebook page reads, "If the government can close schools from operating, then why is it difficult to stop commercial flights like Kenya Airways from operating in the Ebola-affected countries?" So that's still very much an issue of contention on our social media. Now, still on that topic, a Hazardy expert Yao says the outbreak has spoiled the business of chop bar operators, and that's a reference there to local food stores. Now, one listener did take exception with us looking at how business is affecting Ebola. He wrote on our page that we should be focusing on how Ebola is threatening innocent lives in West Africa instead of focusing on business in Ghana. We obviously are trying to look at how the disease is affecting all aspects of life, and that does include the economy and business.
Thank you very much, Kim Chakaneta there. Dr. Okware, let's look at solutions and, you know, what can be done in the future. Just give us an idea of what do you think would work.
I think first and foremost, we must ask ourselves, why has the epidemic erupted? It's erupted because there are weaknesses in our system, there are weaknesses in our surveillance system, weaknesses in laboratory services, and also weaknesses in healthcare delivery. So I think the first and foremost, we must strengthen our health services. Secondly, we must strengthen our public health education at all levels. And thirdly, I think we must ensure that there is collaboration at all levels. I'm talking here about partnerships, especially at the community level. I'm talking about non-government organizations at the community level, working together with all non-government organizations, including the religious organizations, which are in every parish. That type of arrangement must be strengthened.
Let's talk very quickly about the way in which the main strategy right now for containment, which is the isolation of people in very big areas in Sierra Leone and Liberia. How effective is that?
Well, isolation is quite is effective to some extent. I mean, it's the only pollution. Early case detection and isolation and proper care is what is should actually be the ideal way of warding off the infection. But I think it's important that when we're looking at the when we're looking at isolation, we must look at the fact that we are taking care of the dead, the dying, and the living. All these must be taken care of. So, so unfortunately, for those who are already sick, it's unfortunate. There's very little we can actually offer. But I think a lot of emphasis must be put on those who are living, because by just public education, by ensuring that they participate, by ensuring that they avoid risky situations like getting near funeral rites, participating in funerals unnecessarily and taking care of patients unnecessarily without being protected.
Okay. Dr. Okware, yes. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. Thank you so very much for your time over this hour and this special edition of Focus on Africa. We'll be back in 19 hours GMT with another special edition. But on behalf of all my guests and Kim Chakaneta as well, thank you very much for participating.